Katie.
Hi, Julia.
Hi.
Welcome to another episode of Getting Literate.
I'm Julia. That's Julia. Hi, Julia.
Hey.
And I'm Katie.
Hey, Katie.
And
hello, Katie. Yeah.
From across the room.
Hi.
What are you reading this
week?
Yeah,
what are we reading this week? We read a short story by Sylvia Plath called Mary Ventura and the Ninth Kingdom.
Yeah.
Long ass title, but we love it.
We love it. Tell me more about it.
Well, why don't you tell me what we're drinking?
Okay. So
first and foremost,
I'm drinking red wine and Katie's drinking white wine. Colors play an important they're
Katie's
very prevalent
bitch, so.
In this novel. No. It's a whole thing where there's this red and white swirly vest of the refreshments guy. And so I thought having both red and white wine would be an homage to that.
I love that.
Yeah.
And also very considerate because, I don't drink red wine, so.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. I do love white.
I do love red.
Yeah. But you're right. Color plays a lot of... It's a big deal It's a big deal in this.
Yeah.
Sylvia Plath. We have to stan.
I have a color-coded note of every single time.
Holy fuck.
Every single thing that got mentioned, every single color, and everything that was of that color in color-coded in my notes.
You're insane.
Yes.
Although that's not hard because this book is literally 40 pages.
Yeah.
We
read a novel this week.
We read things. We read pages. It's in a book. It's its own thing.
Okay. It costs the same amount as a Kobo ebook at a local bookstore.
Yeah, well, we support local bookstores.
Yeah, I'm not complaining. I'm just saying. If it costs the same, it is the same.
You're so right. You're so right.
Also, it's midterm season, or at least the second last week of the semester.
It's basically exams.
Yes.
I'm tired. We've read
so
too
stressed.
Much. We're burnt out.
Mm-hmm.
So we read a short story, and you're all going to have to fucking deal with it.
Exactly.
I'm sure everyone's very upset. Margaret Atwood listening in. She's disappointed in us. I can't.
Yeah,
it's fine.
I know it. Who's our other guy? Oh, Daniel. Daniel's Nayeri. Fucking screaming that we didn't
Honestly.
Read Woodhouse.
Yeah.
Screaming, okay. Crying, throwing up.
He'll recover. It's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah,
tell us about
this story. I'm like, why am I looking at the back of the book? Because I have to read the summary. Written while Sylvia Plath was a student at Smith College in 1952, Mary Ventura and the Ninth Kingdom tells the story of a young woman's fateful train journey. Lips the color of blood, the sun an unprecedented orange, train wheels that sound like guilt and guilt and guilt are just some of the things Mary Ventura begins to notice on her journey to the Ninth Kingdom. But what is the Ninth Kingdom, she asks the kind-seeming lady in her carriage. It is the kingdom of the frozen will, comes the reply. There is no going back. Sylvia Plath's strange, dark tale of female agency and independence, written not long after she herself left home, grapples with mortality in motion. Sexy.
Very sexy.
Incredibly sexy.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of this?
I loved it. I think you heard me describing it to my mom.
Yes,
not
you
long
did.
Ago.
Yeah. So I'm going to say 4.5 stars.
5.
Oh, sick.
Yeah.
Awesome. I get to drink. Cool.
Yeah. A whole half sip of wine. Mm. Boo-hoo.
So sad for me.
Did you like it?
I did.
Did you give it 5 stars?
I did.
Cheers.
So you get to drink for getting it right, and we get to drink for getting the same thing.
I love our one brain cell.
I love finding any excuse to take a fucking drink.
Cheers. I'll drink to that.
It's a drinking game, and you just test how many things you can call a reason to drink.
Yes. How about you take that sip?
Yeah.
And I start talking about what I liked best.
Please do.
Okay. Get ready to take another sip because I did like the writing. It was really good. I really liked it, and we are not surprised. What else I really enjoyed about this is the stop at the Sixth Kingdom. I thought that was a great and concise piece of world building.
With a blonde woman?
Yeah.
Yeah, drink. You gotta drink.
Yeah. I'm drinking.
Mm-hmm.
And last but not least is the ending. I loved that ending.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you get to drink for that one, actually, too, I guess.
Excellent.
We're going to bend the rules on that. No, those are good.
Cheers, yeah.
Those are good. I mean, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because, I will say, one of my top threes was the second woman at the very end. She was, maternal or whatever. She was bent over all the flowers.
Yes.
She just is hey, right at the very end.
Yeah.
You
can probably go to page 40 and read that.
You know what? I probably could, because it's... we're going to be like, let's quote this book. And suddenly we've read the whole thing just out of order.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Mary could see the full boxes of white roses and daffodils looped with green leaves and the woman in a brown coat bending maternally over the display. As Mary approached, the woman lifted her head and met Mary's eyes with a blue gaze of triumphant love. I have been waiting for you, dear, she said.
I love her.
I love her.
I love her.
I love her. I also love the first woman on the train. Yes. She's wonderful.
Yes.
She's great. Did I put that in my top three or did I put something else?
So we'll call her Chocolate Bar Lady, the yes. first woman on the train, and the woman at the end, Flower Lady.
I like that. I like that. Those are good names. Yeah, so I like Chocolate Bar Lady. She's not actually on my top three because very specifically, I like the fact that she's knitting. Like, very specifically, Bar Lady. I'm a fan. Yeah.
You're like, ah, this is good shit.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, I'll get into my reasons for it, but I fucking love it. I just love it. I think it's great. Mm-hmm. And then also the twist. I like that it had a twist.
Remind me of the twist.
Well, just the fact that she gets on the train and she's like, what? And then all of a sudden she fucking realizes.
Oh, yeah. That's like, awesome.
That moment of realization.
Yes.
Girl,
I should have put that on my top. Yeah.
Because, like,
that moment of realization. Yeah.
It starts out and you're kind of like, okay, a train ride. This is a little weird.
This is, oh, it's a little spooky.
It's a little spooky. Oh, this is fucking weird.
Oh, this is fucked up.
This is real fucked up. Oh my God, this is really fucked up. And like, you're experiencing it all at the same time that like Mary is. And it's yes. like, that's, she's such a good writer.
She's such a good writer.
God, I love Sylvia Plath.
Yes. And then we get to the twist.
Yeah.
And as the back of the book said, female agency, where she's like, no, and like women helping women, we see so little of that in literature. Mm-hmm.
Truly. Mm-hmm. Truly. What's in your worst?
Her parents.
Oh, fucking drink. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Yeah. I'm just gonna send you to your death, little girl. Mm.
You have to go though.
Bye. We want the house to ourselves. Blah.
Quite literally, yeah.
Yeah. The conductor.
Oh, no, actually. I mean, not for me. I feel like you, like, looked at me, like, as if you were like, is that on both of ours? But no. Interesting.
Yeah, no, I love the way he's described.
Oh, okay.
Like, he has, black eyes, I think, that are flecked with cold laughter or something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah.
If you know the page it's on, I can tell you.
Nope.
All right.
Yeah. He's just not a great guy.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he's gross.
I don't like him. I also don't like the three drunk men.
Fair.
They just stick out to me in my brain. I was sitting as we were recording, like, the tapes are rolling, and I was trying to think of my worst three because I only wrote her parents and then got distracted. And then I was like, huh, I need two more. And they just stuck out for me. You know, I didn't like them.
Yeah, that's fair.
But I almost didn't put them on my worst. I remember I was trying to think of my worst, and then I was like, kind of glad they died, but, like.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. I guess maybe the Sixth Kingdom stop is like a best and a worst for me. It's painful.
It's painful. Like, that's why it's on my worst.
Yeah.
Is because it's so painful.
Yeah, I think I'm actually going to change it to it's going to be on my best and worst.
That's allowed.
It's our fucking podcast.
You're right, actually. You're right.
We make the rules.
You're so right. Okay, I like that. Fun. So then you still get to drink because, it is on my worst. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then her parents.
Yeah.
Oh my God, what was my third? What was my third worst? I didn't write one down, but you know what?
You know how it be.
It's this bit right here that I was trying to flip through and find the description of the conductor. Mm-hmm. And it's a lady in a blue jacket carrying a baby wrapped in a soiled white blanket paused at Mary's seat for a minute, but then continued to the back of the car where there was more room. Something about that is so deeply tragic to me.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. I don't love that. It's... No. Yeah. I don't like it. I don't like it at all. Ugh. Oh, well. Yeah, it's, fucked. Okay, I don't think it's about people dying.
What do you think it's about?
Like, I think it's about, like a social death or an emotional death.
Okay.
Of, like, being a, like, woman.
Okay.
You know?
Can expand.
Like, the reason that the woman carrying the baby is so tragic to me is because it's like, yeah, that's all you are now. Like you have no more agency. You don't get the choice to do anything that you want with your life. Like, this is, you're on this path and you chose to take it and you get to go, and that's who you are now. You don't get any sort of, because I think that, like,
so it's a more, like, it's less of a literal death.
Yes.
And yeah. Wanna what, knowing how much Sylvia Plath hated her own pregnancies,
yeah,
and her, how difficult motherhood was for her, I totally yeah. see that.
Well, and I mean, she would have written that before this, right? Because she was just at college.
Yeah.
But I think, when did she write The Bell Jar? Like 10 years later? Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's also about, like, going out into the world and being, like, in, like, this program of, like, have you read it? You've read The Bell Jar.
Actually, I haven't.
Oh.
I want to. I just haven't got around to it.
Yeah. It starts out, like, just the beginning of it. Like, she's in, like, this, the main character is in, like, this, like, program thing. It's like an internship over the summer at like a magazine,
mm-hmm.
and she's out there and like hanging out with like all of these other girls, mm-hmm. and it's like you get the sense that it's like, this is what your life is now, mm-hmm. and it's gonna fucking suck, and this is it, and you're gonna hate yourself, and you're gonna hate everyone around you.
That's very Plath.
Yeah. So
yeah,
it just, yeah, this whole thing. And so I don't really know what to do with like the other people on the train that aren't women with that interpretation of this.
But they don't matter.
But they do, though.
No, I'm joking.
Like, what do you think? Like, the drunk men, like, they stood out to you. Like, what do you think?
I think it's, like, a loss of, like, reputation. Like, those three men, like, probably botched some, like, job thing, like, a presentation. I'm thinking their buddies working on, this big job together. They botched it. They got drunk. And they're taking their jovial drunk walk to, like, I don't know, a dead-end job.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a reputational death.
Yes.
Okay.
And like a death of like career progressment. Like, this is it for their careers. Like, this is it for your life as a woman. Like, this is it for your career. You are like,
interesting,
a drunk, dead end job man now.
Interesting. I like that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
But that's really interesting that you brought that up, because I did write down here that like, it seems to me that, like, leaving home seems some sort of death for Sylvia Plath. And it's kind of, like, the death of, like, childhood or, like, childhood innocence.
Yeah.
Sort of happening.
Yeah. And I think, like, protection of, like, the home, you know? Yeah. But, like, as a child. Because I don't think, like, as, like, a mother or as, like, a wife that she thinks that the home is protective.
No.
Like, at all.
No.
It gives me
Stepford Where do you think she wives. Died?
Yeah. It gives me Stepford Wives vibes.
I don't remember that.
Have I not made you read it? Okay.
I don't think so.
That's fine. Basically, it's like around the same time, actually, that this was written. I think maybe 10 years later.
Okay.
It's the same guy who wrote Rosemary's Baby.
Oh, okay.
And he, oh my God, it's so good. I have the EPUB, so I'll send you it. But
you mean I will purchase that novel?
Oh, yes. I purchased the EPUB, and I will send you the purchased EPUB that I definitely have legally acquired.
We will legally acquire this novel.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Basically, this woman moves out to, like, a suburb with, like, her family in, like, and I want to say it's set in, like, the 60s or 50s. But it's, yeah. Anyway, it doesn't matter. And she's like, there's something funky with, like, this place. Like, all of the women have, like, massive tits, and they're all, like, really, like, distant, and they don't want to ever come over and like hang out with me, and like no one's interested in like women's lib, like why don't they have any personalities? And it's because they're murdering them and replacing them with robots.
Oh, you told me about this.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like very interesting, like cyborg things to think about there, but also like literal murder and like zero protection.
Yeah.
From like
the world.
Your world. And like, once you're a mother, like, that's all you're good for.
Yep.
And honestly, like, that's so undervalued that you could be replaced by, like, an android.
Mm-hmm.
And something that kind of, like, stands out, and I've done, like, a lot of, like, listening to, like, interpretations and analysis and, like, talking about this book with, like, other people and shit. Like, I just, it's been coming up in my life a lot recently in the past, like, couple months. It's very weird. But, like, her like friends' kids after their mom gets like turned or murdered or whatever are like, yeah, she's kind of like weird now, but she makes us like hot breakfast, so who cares? And it's like, even like your fucking kids don't care about you.
Yeah.
When you're like a wife and mother.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's upsetting. It's upsetting. Anyways, I don't know. I'm going to find a quote from a different source. I should have thrown that to you. It's fine. But tell me more about what you thought about this.
I thought it was very interesting. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Only 9 colors were mentioned if you count silver and gray as the same color.
Okay.
Interesting. I know there's not a lot of colors, but red is mentioned so much, and then like black, and then white, and then blue, and then brown, and then actually gray slash silver is close to black and blue in like the top 3. Purple is mentioned once, and it's the bruise that the little boy gives the other. That part was interesting.
Yeah.
I wonder really interesting. What that symbolizes.
Well, because it's 2 kids, right? Like, they're brothers, and they're, like, hitting each other with, like, toy soldiers, right?
Uh-huh. Do you think they go to war?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
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 Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's fucked. Okay. I'm sad. All right. Yep. That's fine.
Just drink that wine. Mm-hmm. There's the orange sun, and that's the only time orange is mentioned.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. It's just, like, very interesting to me. Just, like, the use of colors in the short story. And, like, it is a short story.
Oh, it's a very short story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But color is so prevalent, but so, like, specifically used. Precisely used is what I'm trying to say. Yeah.
Yeah. Can I ask you to close read this one passage?
Yeah.
Just, like... off the cuff.
Yeah.
I think this is gonna be fun.
Okay.
It's gonna be fun. Okay. Mary relaxed in the soft ease, sipping her ginger ale. In the subtle, indirect light, the cushioned seats were a warm red color, and the music came lilting continually from the hidden loudspeaker. Mary sucked up the last of her ginger ale and tipped the glass so that the cherry rolled down into her hand. She popped it into her mouth and bit into the sweet fruit. That's page 13.
Thank you.
A reference. For that.
Yeah, I definitely want to be able to, like, see it. So she's in the diner car with Chocolate Bar Lady. Mm-hmm. And this is where Chocolate Bar Lady starts to... It's where Mary starts to trust Chocolate Bar Lady.
Yeah.
She start, like, the, like follows her along, kind of, like, just as a chance to stretch her legs. And... Yeah. This is the first time, really, she's at ease. She's, like, stressed out at the train station. She's, like, a little on edge, like, in her seat at the car, you know, watching the wheels go by. But she's finally, like, having this, like, delicacy, this sweet treat, mm-hmm. and, like, relaxing in this, like... seemingly normal train car, because things aren't really weird yet. So I think it's almost like a calm before the storm.
Okay.
But there's still like this evocation of like red, because red is like, it's very prevalent on this train, and it reminds me a lot of blood and doom.
Okay.
I have this whole note where there's a lot of red versus white and red and black versus white in this novel.
Yeah.
And how like red is like blood and doom versus like purity and holiness, and that sort of like shows up in the two handkerchiefs in the story.
Yeah.
So the conductor has a red handkerchief and the chocolate bar lady has a white handkerchief. So I really white handkerchief of the lady is like purity and like holiness and helpfulness. And red is blood and doom. So she pops this red fruit into her mouth and, like, bites it.
Yeah.
And releases red juices, I'm assuming. So I really think it's, like, a calm before the storm. Like, blood is about to flow. That's what I would
I like that. This.
Thank you.
I like that. That's good.
And that's how you bullshit assignments in university,
absolutely,
folks.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. I think the fact that it's the, like the turning point for her to like start trusting this older woman who, like, to me, that's her, like, it's, you know, this is her, like, at the end of her life, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's very interesting.
Yeah.
And can we talk about how Flower Lady and Chocolate Bar Lady are definitely the same lady?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this is why I think that they're all her. Like, I think that they're all Mary Ventura. Yeah. But I think it's interesting. I think it's interesting that, like, she starts trusting her right here, because I didn't actually pick up on that until you said that. Mm-hmm. Like, this is that turning point.
Yeah.
Because, like, there's something there about, like, cherries mm-hmm. and, like, virginity.
Yes.
Right? And, like, growing
Doesn't
up.
Doesn't it literally say pop it in her mouth?
That's a good question.
Cherry popped.
She popped it into her mouth and bit into the sweet fruit. Yeah. Like, there's something there about, like, growing up and realizing that things are bad, and also, like, choosing to trust your future self.
Yeah.
With this decision. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yep.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to, like, leaving the childhood behind, going from the safety of home. Like,
yeah.
We're calm. We're relaxed. We're popping. We're chilling.
Oh my god. We're popping shit. Yeah. All right. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. As you do.
Totally.
On the train.
Super normal girl shit. Yeah. Oh man. Yeah. Honestly. Yeah. I don't know. That whole like section just stood out to me. I was like.
Yeah.
Even before I realized what the fuck was going on, I was like. This is a real graphic way. Like, no, it's not even graphic, but I was just like, this is a lot of emphasis to put on this fucking cherry and this ginger ale.
Yeah.
Sylvia. I miss her.
I miss her, too.
And I was born, like, 3 decades after she killed herself, but I miss her.
Yeah.
It's fine. There's this,
Did you find your quote?
Oh, I did. Yeah. I was just going to say there's this, like, not anthology, but, like, collection of, like, her letters and diaries. That's, like, $60 fucking. Maybe more than that. It's an expensive book. And I'm like, that's on my wish list for someday.
Yeah. Someday.
It's got, like, photos of her and shit. It's all annotated. It's in, like, her original handwriting. And then, like, there's, like, the transcriptions of it on the other. Oh, fuck. I need it.
Oh, that sounds so good.
I love Sylvia Plath so much.
When I got this book, this is a quick aside.
Yeah.
I was, like, in this little bookstore with my boyfriend. And I was like, oh, my God, Sylvia Plath has a short story. And he's like, who's Sylvia Plath? And I was like,
oh. Leave. So your ex-boyfriend, you mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my God. That's so funny, though. That's cute.
Yeah.
That's cute. Yeah, I did find my quote. I did.
Read it to me, please.
It's so fucking devastating. I have not stopped thinking about it since I saw it for the first time. And I saw it on, like, Twitter, which is rude. But it's, yeah. It's from Bonnie Burstow. She's, like, a feminist theorist and psychologist also, I think. This is from her book, Radical Feminist Therapy, Working in the Context of Violence. So, yeah. But basically, it's like, often father and daughter look down on mother, woman, together. They exchange meaningful glances when she misses a point. They agree she is not as bright as they are, cannot reason as they do. This collusion does not save the daughter from the mother's fate. That last line there,
ooh, I think it's
so
chills.
Applicable here.
I think you've read this before, perhaps even on this podcast.
Quite possibly.
I think the Gracier one.
I think I did. Yeah, yeah. I think I did.
Let's drink to that.
Yeah. Cheers.
Cheers.
Absolutely.
yeah
I have not stopped thinking. We did Gracier what, 2 fucking months ago?
Yeah,
more than that.
Yeah, like, yeah, end of August, yeah. Early September.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like end of November.
Yeah.
And I'm still out here like, huh. This collusion does not save the daughter from the mother's fate. Sick. Cool. Awesome. Love it. I'm not gonna cry.
We're both looking at each other.
Like, just
like misty-eyed.
Keep it together.
Like,
keep
okay,
it together.
You got this, girly.
It's good. It's great. It's fantastic. Aww. I'm trying to find the Six Kingdoms stop. Because
we've mentioned it so many goddamn times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Red neon blinked outside the window and the train slowed, shuddering into the station of the Sixth Kingdom. The car door swung open and the tread of the conductor came down the aisle to the blonde woman up ahead with the red painted mouth, who paled, drew her furs about her, and shrank back. Not yet, she said. Please, not yet. This is not my stop. Give me a little longer. Let me see your ticket, the conductor said, and the woman wet her lips, the color of blood. I mislaid it. I can't find it, she said. And then they go through a whole thing. She's hidden it in, like, the tip of her glove. It's, like, yeah. Whatever. The conductor put out his hand and gripped her arm. I'm sorry, he said, but you must go now. We can't have any dallying around on this train. We have a schedule to keep. We have a quota of passengers. She got up and walked down the aisle, her crimson wool skirt balancing and swaying about her legs, her head held proud and defiant. Outside the door of the car on the platform, there were two station guards waiting for her. In the red glare of neon light that fell full upon them, they took the woman away, one on either side of her, through the barred exit gate. Oh no, here's the description of the conductor as well.
Cheers.
Yeah. The conductor came back down the car, wiping his forehead with a large red silk handkerchief. He paused at Mary's seat and grinned at the woman. His eyes were black, bottomless, but flecked now with cold spots of laughter.
Okay, so right off the bat, The Sixth Kingdom is giving me, like, red light district.
Oh, red neon light district?
Yeah, red neon light district. So I really do think this is her, like, foray into sex work. But I also think it's her foray into, like, male violence that comes with sex work.
Oh my god, yeah.
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 It's like they go hand in hand.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, honestly, like, she's not supposed to get to the final stop, right? And the final stop is, like, death, reputational, social, emotional.
Yeah.
Kind of.
This is your place in society now.
Yeah. Yeah. This is the end of your independent life.
Yeah.
Yeah. But she doesn't get off there.
No.
So she kind of still has one.
Yeah.
But it's so marked by that violence.
Yeah.
Also, everything about her is red.
Everything. And she's, like, sashaying and swaying.
Yeah. She's wearing furs.
Yeah.
Like, there's kind of this, like, sensuality that's been given to her, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's fucked. It makes me so sad.
So sad.
Ugh. And it's just, like, uncomfortable. Like, she's like, yeah, like, don't, you know, I don't want to get off this stop right now.
I know. Which Please. Is, like, hard in contrast with what the woman says to Mary about, you know, they bought the ticket. It's their choice. They could have chose otherwise. Yeah. Like, that's an instance, one that we see more classically of women putting other women down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because she does say that. And, like, the conductor is kind of, like, colluding with her. Not colluding, but, like, you know what I mean. Like, kind of, like...
They're, like, in cahoots.
Yeah. They're, like, joking together about it.
Yeah, they're, like another sex worker!
It's not usually that hard to get her to get women off this fucking train, you know? Like, it's... Yeah. She's, like, haha, they should just accept it. Like, it's, like, girly.
Bestie. We're saving little girls, but... If you stop at the Sixth Kingdom, if that's your stop,
that's on you.
Sucks to suck, girly, quite literally.
Like, very much so, like, almost, like, victim blaming.
Literally.
Yeah. I do love the way that, like, just this last bit, the red light of the station slanted through the car windows and briefly stained the faces of the passengers scarlet, and it's like, y'all are, what's the word I'm looking for?
Bystanders, not innocent, red-handed, red-faced. Y'all are part of the
responsible,
problem.
Responsible, but, like, yeah, this is your fault. Yeah. You've done this.
Yeah.
Like, you are all part of this. You've participated in this violence.
Yes.
Yeah. I love that.
Just you are not innocent.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
Ah, I love it so much. Mm-hmm. I also love the fact that she's knitting the whole time.
Me too.
Sorry, I just, like, read another thing about her knitting, and I'm like, I love it. Yes. Continue to knit, girly. Every fucking word choice here is so
poignant.
It's so deliberate.
Yeah.
Like, the lights in the ceiling were hard, glaring stars. And the baby kept on crying as if it would cry forever. I told you, I'm just going to read this whole fucking book. Yeah. It's so good.
It's so good. It's 40 pages. Read it. I'm sure you can find it online.
Honestly, it would take all of 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So, anyways, what do you want to, go off?
Yeah, I would love to.
Please do.
Okay, I want to talk about, like, symbols and illusions in this story. So first off, early on, I think around the first station stop, which isn't really a station that they stop at anymore.
Yeah.
They see a couple of crows. And I think that's really interesting that they chose a distinction between crows and ravens, because ravens typically symbolize death. That's their big... what they're known for, their MO, but crows actually symbolize adaptability, transformation, and this isn't relevant, but I think it's cool, like, psychic ability, like, is it that,
No, I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, which I could, you could take in this context as, like, intuition almost, and that's, like, Mary's intuition around the turn of the novel. Mm. Or I should stop saying novel, story.
Yeah, it's a novel. It's a mini novel.
It's a baby. Ravens and crows, they are symbolized in this. Mm-hmm. But they're also black, which is, like, interesting because a lot of the black stuff are associated with the bad guys, like the conductor's uniform, parts of the train, like the ticket, the conductor's eyes, hands of the clock, you know, yeah. And the clock is, like, ticking down the seconds to, like, get on the fucking train, girly. Yeah. But in this case, the crows aren't necessarily bad. And then blackbirds are referenced again when Mary runs away to the Seventh Kingdom.
Yeah.
And also the stairs that kind of lead her to her freedom are black. So it's kind of like also a transformation of the color black, or just like a new meaning for it, which I think is super cool. Also, so this is like the last paragraph, second last. Like one awakening from a sleep of death, she walked across the gravel path that twinkled with the mica of little pebbles. It was the spring of the year. Spring. Rebirth. New life. Interesting. And there was a woman selling flowers on the street corner, singing to herself. Mary could see the full boxes of white roses and daffodils, looped with green leaves, and the woman in a brown coat bending maternally over the display. So... yeah. First of all, as I said, I wrote down every single instance of color, reference to color in this story. So the only woman with a brown coat is the woman on the train, the chocolate bar woman. That's why we think she is the same lady. Also, the wool, the color of the wool that the chocolate bar woman was knitting was leaf green. It was literally described as leaf green. And then there's leaves associated with it. Like, oh, come on, lady. Oh, also, they both have blue eyes. And they're, like, the only woman to have blue eyes in this story. So we think they're together. But what's really interesting is the illusion of, like, spring and, like, flowers, right?
Yeah.
But the daffodils specifically mean rebirth.
Ooh.
Yeah. And white roses symbolize, like, a new beginning and, like, love, which I think is really interesting because blue is not mentioned many times. It's Nice Lady's Eyes. It's Flower Lady's Eyes. It's pigeons. But it's also the mother's jacket, the mother holding the baby with the white soiled blanket. Yes. So I think blue is, like, associated with, like, motherhood and motherliness, which I think is just really interesting, that the flower lady gives, like, white roses. Yeah. It's, like, motherly love, and, like, I'm saving you, my child, but it's also myself. But it's, like, tenderness for a younger version of yourself.
Caring, like, you know how people always talk about, like, healing, like, your inner child as part of, like, working through trauma? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. That. And indulging your inner child. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nurturing your inner child.
Mm-hmm. And, like, that goes along with, like, knitting is, like, creation, right?
Yeah.
And there's so much, like, reference to new life in terms of, like, the Nice Lady.
Mm-hmm.
And also, she's the only one associated with earth tones in this.
Yeah.
So I'm, like, Mother Earth, sort of, almost, like, protector.
Yeah.
Almost, like... anyway, that was pretty much all I got. It's not a long thing. Oh, red.
Yeah.
That's definitely a symbol, like hell, of course, the devil.
Oh, of course,
evil, bad, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Blood, all that. Did I get everything else?
You asked me earlier something about the Bible. I don't know if you wanted to I don't know if there was religious undertones.
Oh my god, my illusion.
Yeah.
Right. So at the Sixth Kingdom part, they say, okay, Lady Town across the river. And I think that's definitely an allusion to, like, Charon, the river guy in Greek mythology. And so I was thinking, like, is there's, like, some correlation between the different kingdoms and, like, different religions or afterlives, but I really like the metaphorical death more than the literal one, so I don't think that's true.
Both
anymore.
Though
that's right? True,
because even if you're talking about, like, a metaphorical death, you're still gonna associate, like, imagery and, like, allusions to actual, like, literal figures of death.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah,
I like that though.
Thank you.
Yeah, I was actually on the first page there's a mention of a cathedral, and I can't remember in what context. I'll read it.
The long black hand of the clock on the wall of the train station, I added that, clipped off another minute. Everywhere there were people running to catch trains. Above them, the vault of the railroad station lifted like the dome of a huge cathedral.
Interesting. Okay. I was just, like, thinking about symbolism and things like that. Because you've brought it up. You've mentioned it. You've expanded. And I was like, you know what? What are the numbers? What do the numbers symbolize?
Great Q.
Yeah. In religion. So there's, you know, God took 6 days to create the world.
True.
6 points on a Star of David.
Okay.
Lots of six in, like, the Old Testament and the Torah and the Bible itself. This is just telling me where it comes up. And I want to know more about why it's important. Because
I know a lot of the numbers in the Bible just have meanings. Like, I remember 40 being, like, means a very long time. Like, it's not literally 40.
Yeah.
It's just, like, 40 means, phew, fucking
40 just means, like, we can't count that high.
Yeah. It's too many.
Yeah, okay, meaning of the numbers, so this BibleStudy.org, I trust them more, okay. it symbolizes man and human weakness.
Which would go to red light. Oh my god.
Yeah. Because, I mean, like, 666, right, is the devil or whatever.
Number of the beast.
Yeah, okay, and then number 7, BibleStudy.org, we'll trust this one again. Mm-hmm. It's used 735 times in the Bible. The number 7.
Specific?
Yeah.
Go off?
Yeah.
What does it mean?
And if, oh, sorry, if we include this count with how many times sevenfold and seventh is used, it jumps to 860 references. Fuck. It's the number of completeness and perfection.
Huh.
Tied directly to God's creation of all things. Because the creation of Adam occurred on the seventh day, right?
True. I thought he rested on the seventh day.
No, wait. No, God's Sabbath is on the seventh day. Creation of Adam occurred on the seventh month of the Hebrew calendar. Mm. And the Bible as a whole was apparently originally divided into 7 major divisions. Mm. The total number of originally inspired books is 49, or 7 times 7.
Wow.
That's kind of fucking interesting. But also just, like, the actual number itself, it's a prime number, right?
Yes.
And, yeah, it's a big deal. Like, it's a big deal, because, holy shit. Apparently in Hinduism, Islam, Eastern tradition, like Buddhism and stuff like that, it's all over the place, 7.
Huh.
So I'm interested, like, that seems to me like she would have been like, yes, we're going to use this.
Yeah.
I like that, though.
What does ninth king nine
That's
mean?
A good question. Completion. It's the last of the single digit numbers and the highest in value. Symbolically represents a culmination of wisdom and experience.
Culmination.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, it's there a lot. I wouldn't say, I don't know, I'm not seeing as much. Like, I think that obviously, well, there it is. The Bible recorded that Christ died at the ninth hour of the day. That's hilarious. Yeah. It's not as significant in Christianity, which I think, in Catholicism, which I think is what Sylvia Plath would have been leaning on a lot. I don't think that she was Catholic. She might have been, like, Protestant.
Yeah.
If I'm remembering properly. But yeah. So, I mean, there's, but yeah, so it's, like,
the hour at which Christ died.
The hour at which Christ died. Like, and if, honestly, like, if we're thinking, like, Mary Ventura as, like, Christ in this story.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. There's so much symbolism going on in here, and she is so deliberate with everything.
Yeah.
And it's so good.
It's so good. So what would you write your essay on?
What would I write my essay on? Okay. So we talked about how the woman in the coat has a green, she's knitting. And she's associated with earth tones.
Uh-huh.
But it's green yarn that she's using.
Leaf green.
Yeah. And so, oh god, where did the quote go? Yeah. So I would call my essay, A Girl Just About Your Size, dissecting green and associations with youth. And honestly, okay, this sounds really lame, but I pulled this. Okay. I saw, it is a TikTok that has stuck with me, but it's basically like a dissection of like what a green dress means in movies.
Okay.
And in like cinema.
Interesting.
And basically, you know, they go into this thing about how like a green dress, when you see it in a movie, it's typically associated with the visual and emotional high point of the movie. And it's typically the last time you experience anything youthful or vibrant in the story. So they talk about like Scarlett O'Hara's green trim dress and like the green dress in Atonement that Keira Knightley wears. Like there's a whole host of green dresses that you can look at. Do you remember, you've seen Burlesque?
Yes.
Do you remember the scene when it's like a cut scene, not cut scene, but it's like a bunch of like, she's singing and then there's a bunch of other shit happening, but she's got the really short blonde hair and she's wearing a green dress, Christina Aguilera? Yeah. And that's kind of like before everything sort of starts to turn. Like just, and you know, just there's like tons of movies where you can look at and be like, oh, when are they wearing a green dress and where does it start to go poorly for them as women in this story?
After that.
Yeah. And so I think that just like unpacking that and the fact that this woman is making this green dress.
Okay.
She's like knitting, right? She's knitting, first of all. Who the fuck knits a dress?
Okay, right? I was like, thinking that. I was literally thinking that. I was like, vibes. Who the fuck knits a dress?
Well, actually, you know what? There's this girl that I am following online who's crocheting her wedding dress. So like it's doable. Okay, but
that's crackhead shit.
It's a lot of
no
work.
No offense, TikTok online
and also
person.
Kind of, it's not the norm. Mm-mm. Right? And so she's like knitting this fucking dress and it's like for a girl just about your size. I think the fact that she's knitting a dress for a girl just about Mary's size is so interesting, and the fact that it's a green dress.
Yeah.
And that she's the one who helps her kind of like get off the train and kind of get back to like a youth that is her own.
Mm-hmm.
Right? An emotional like agency.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to unpack that further and like do some comparisons and parallels and shit. So
that sounds great.
Yeah. How about you?
I would call it the nine colors in the ninth kingdom.
Ooh.
Yeah. So I would just read the colors even more than I did now. And just like talk about how frequently they're used and what they symbolize.
I love it.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
You got a free preview in this podcast.
Yeah. You've done like a draft of your like, yeah, you've done an early draft here, essentially.
Yeah. I didn't touch on orange,
no,
gold,
yeah,
or gray in this podcast. So contribute to our Patreon. I'm joking. We don't have one.
I wish we did. Maybe one day.
One day, Margaret will give us that fat $1 a month subscription.
Yeah, when we can actually make more content than reading like a 40-page short story in a week. Yeah. So stay tuned. Anyways.
Big plans ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe we'll eventually up our game. We'll see. Oh, well. No, I love that, though. I love that. Cute.
Cute. Okay.
Any thoughts?
I need to read more Plath.
Yes, you do. You need to read The Bell Jar. If you like this, you need to read The Bell Jar.
I know I love Sylvia Plath.
Yeah.
I just haven't.
No. Yeah.
Read it.
That's
a lot.
Fair. But yeah. She's so good.
Mm-hmm. Parting thoughts.
I fucking love Sylvia Plath. I miss her so much. She was so right about everything.
Yeah.
Even sticking her head in the oven. She was right on that.
Yeah.
I'm not mad. I just, you know, disappointed. Anyways. Yeah.
Okay.
Fucking cheers.
Yeah. Good night. Sleep tight.
This has
don't
been
board.
A, any been an episode tonight. Of Getting Literate?
Oh, yeah. I'm Julia.
I'm Katie. Don't work in green, which is
doing. Cheers. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
This has been an episode of Getting Literate with Julia Honadel and Katie McCullough.
Be sure to follow us on social media at Getting Literate on all platforms. And follow the podcast from wherever you're listening for more opportunities to get lit and get literate.